Pickaxe.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the podcast of the video game based around the moral dilemma, the trolley problem. My name's Simon Byron and I'm joined by Samuel Reed Graves, the developer of Trolley Problem Inc. Hello, Sam.
You all right, Simon? We've got some good problems today. Obviously, starting with Trolley Problem, and then we'll move on to, I think, probably some more exciting current problems.
Okay, looking forward to it. We actually had to deal with our own sort of ethical dilemma today, didn't we? Because we were due to meet in person to record this episode of the podcast. But one of us, who won't be named, suspected that they'd caught COVID off their wife. And we had a problem, didn't we? Because our train tickets had been paid for. Our hotels had been paid for. Did we want to lose money and proceed at the risk of getting COVID or not?
So we've all gone remote for this episode. So hopefully it's going to work out. I'm sure it will.
We did the right thing, didn't we? You said to me this morning, it was about 7 o'clock. You said, given that we're doing a game based around ethics.
Well, we can't really lie to everyone and get everyone exactly in the same room.
So we've been sent to our respective sheds. So that introduces a host of technical complications, but hopefully we're going to muddle through it. So how have you been, Sam, since we spoke to you last?
Yeah, I'm good. Just head down on the game, really. Just sort of going through a million moral dilemmas and trying to make it funny. It's all a challenge. It's all good.
Exactly. Difficult when there's so much darkness, I would say. On top of our decision this morning, has anything given you cause for concern recently? Any tricky dilemmas in your real life?
Luckily, no. My real life is pretty much just coding, just walks with a dog. It's quite a peaceful time. But again, coming up to launch, I'm sure there will be some times where I have to choose A or B. Do I want this feature or do I want to fix this bug and so on? How about yourself?
Yeah, not so bad. I was watching a video of you earlier on the London Games Festival. That's been exciting to see people start to talk about the game. That's been good.
Excited, cringe. They can be sort of mixed intermittently. I can't watch myself. I'm sure I'll listen to 5 minutes of this podcast and then I'll turn it off and let everyone else enjoy it.
Well, let's hope the listeners don't have that same feeling because we've not got to our guest yet. We'll do so shortly. But just to remind everybody what we're up to here, the podcast based around the video game Trolley Problem Inc., in which you are tasked with making a series of choices from two awful answers as you proceed through the 90 minutes or 2 hours of the game it's going to take you, during which time you will be forced to challenge your own views on a range of topics, as well as see how your moral compass aligns with the rest of the world. We thought it would be a good idea to invite members of the games industry elite into our inner circle and find out from them what sort of choices they'd make when presented with two awful answers. I'm delighted. I'm not sure that he is particularly. I'm delighted that we're joined today by Jamie Sefton. Hello, Jamie.
Hello. Hello, Simon. Hello, Sam. You okay?
Yeah, yeah, we're good, thank you. I haven't seen you in a while because of not only lockdown, but also geography.
Yeah, it's kind of going back old school, isn't it? Back to old COVID, because I was hoping to come and see you in York today, and I was disappointed to hear about the COVID stuff going on, and yeah, shame really, but never mind.
You would have left with an uninvited gift, I think. So it's all for the best. But it's genuinely nice to see you. You look like you've got really good at video calls during lockdown.
Yeah, well, I've had to move a lot of the events that I was running in person, just move them online to sort of keep my business going. So I had to buy in equipment and get things like this microphone and get a new Mac and things like that. So, yeah, I've just had to, I just moved everything online when COVID happened. But now I'm getting back to doing events in person again, just as it's all kicking off again. So that's good.
Exactly. Well, thank you for joining us. You're looking good and sounding good. Could you just introduce yourself and let the listeners know exactly who you are?
Yeah, sure. I'm Jamie Sefton, and I'm Managing Director of Game Republic, which is a Yorkshire and Northern business network for games. And we've got lots of members like Team 17 and Sumo and lots of universities and colleges. And we run events up here in Yorkshire in the north, and we invite companies like Sony and Microsoft to come up and meet our companies. And that's it, really. It's like a place where people can meet and chat and kind of discuss their games they're making and hopefully meet the people that can make the decisions and release their games. And Sam has been to a few of our events in the past. We run a free network as well called Gamayo, Game Makers Yorkshire, which we're bringing back again in May, which I'm really excited about. And that, again, is like hundreds of developers all getting together. We show off games, have a few drinks, and, yeah, it's just a really nice evening.
Yeah, I can say as an honorary Yorkshireman that I've made good use of Game Republic and Gamayo. Really excellent events.
Thanks, Sam. Yeah, so, yeah, and before then I was a lowly games journalist and worked in magazines. And, Simon, you were on the first press trip that I ever went on.
More than
20 years ago. And there was a moral dilemma.
I was going to ask you about that, but before we get to that, tell us about your time as a journalist, because you must have had to make some tricky decisions then. And if you could be honest with us, what's the worst decision that you made, and have you come to regret it?
Ooh, dear me. Well, there was a lot of. I mean, as an editor, obviously you're in charge of the magazine, and anything that you don't like about the situation, you can hopefully sort out. But you do have things that you have to include as part of this kind of commercial reality of running a magazine. So there are some things that were kind of forced upon us. Like we had some terrible ads in the back of PC Zone one time. I think they were kind of like phone sex ads, which were put in the back of the magazine, which was, you know, and our readers were like, what is this? What have you put in the magazine? And we were just like hideously embarrassed. But of course, the next issue, we just put in a piss take back page where we just kind of had, lots of kind of phone lines based on video games instead and kind of taking the mickey out of the previous month. But yeah, I mean, mostly it was because we used to get suggestions, for example, from the advertising department to say, hey, you know, we can put ringtones alongside your reviews, you know, on the same page. And I would say, you know, over my dead body, you're going to put ringtones next to our review page. So I wouldn't say there was that many kind of decisions that I wasn't, pleased
okay.
with, really.
There was
a few that were forced on me, but they were mainly because of budgets and that sort of thing. But of course, all journalists are corrupt and you know, and nasty anyway, aren't they? You know.
Do you know what? I find it difficult to imagine a world where reviews were accompanied by ringtones. what would you give for what would the noise be for a bad game? That sort of thing.
I feel like whenever people talk about ringtones, I only think of the Crazy Frog. I don't know if that's my generation, but I'm sure there was a Crazy Frog game and you know, you got to get those ads in.
Yeah, I've heard a story about that, actually. There was a publisher developer that I'm good friends with, and they said that the person who was selling the, you know, trying to get their game published for Crazy Frog came in to see them at GDC, and they just said, do the voice. We'll listen to your pitch if you do the voice. So they had to stand there and go, beep, 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 and do the Crazy Frog in front of them.
That's a moral dilemma.
As a person pitching
out that room,
yeah. But you know, they were there to sell it. If they didn't believe in the Crazy Frog, then they, you know, what were they doing there in the first place?
So the moral dilemma that I encountered the first time I met Jamie, or the first time we were on a press trip together, we went to Munich to see a game that never came out in the end. Can you remember what it was called?
Yeah, it was to do with, was it the Neverending Story?
That's right, it was the real
Neverending
Story. And
it was Discreet Monsters, I remember the name of the developer, yeah.
Exactly right, we went to Munich. Was it during the beer festival?
Yes, it was, yeah, during the beer festival, yeah.
Where they had, so what we decided to do was take a bunch of games journalists over to Munich, show them the game, take them to the beer festival, what's the worst thing that could happen? And I think I lost my glasses on the roller coasters. There was one ride that I remember looking over, and I forget exactly who it was. And I think I know, but I won't name it for legal reasons. There was one games journalist, there was a ride where it just rotated you and span you around, sort of did this awful thing that looks like you're shaking your hand. And as I looked out, I could just see every time this guy's face was parallel with the floor, he was throwing up. It was throwing up, Anyway, it was a big old night. Did we end up in a fountain?
Yeah, I seem to remember lots of people jumped in a fountain at one point.
Jumped in a fountain. Of course you would. Yeah. You were there to see the real never-ending story. It really, what can make you happier? Anyway, I think we ended up with about 20 minutes sleep, didn't we? And I was inexperienced in running press events. And so we better head back to the hotel now. We
had 20 minutes sleep.
Got an hour of sleep. Everyone back in the coach because we have a plane to catch. So off we go. Brrr, get to the airport. Where's Jamie? Where was Jamie? He'd missed the coach. And I had to make a dilemma, which was, go.
Just head home.
Save Jamie. Of course. Of course. I stayed for you. Mark left, though, didn't he?
Yeah, everyone else left. But, I mean, you did. You waited, because I was in absolute panic. I woke up and I realised that the bus had left and I was just kind of, I just had to grab all my stuff and try and get a cab and explain to the person at the hotel in sort of English, German, you know, how to get a taxi to the airport, you know, because my flight was going. It was my very first press trip. So I thought I would get back in the office and I would be sacked. You know, I'd only been there, I think, about 2 weeks or 3 weeks. I thought I'd get back in and go, oh, you know, be on my first press trip, got drunk, jumped in a fountain, missed my flight. What an unprofessional idiot. You know what I mean? And I got back in the office, said, you know, I've missed my flight. And then everyone went, oh, all right. Can you write that thing up? Yeah, I can. All right, okay. That was it. No one was bothered at all. It was like, you know, I kind of missed the bus on the way to work or something. You know, it was staggering.
And in fact, you ended up getting promoted.
Yes, yeah.
It's fun for me to hear Jamie's side of that story as well, because I don't know if Simon remembers this, but the first time I ever met Simon, like in person, was at Eurogamer. And we were saying about how Jamie was running a game, I think it was a Gamer Public event at Eurogamer. And almost as like an icebreaker for us to get to know each other, we talked about you missing your flight. So
bringing people together, Jamie. See, you were doing it at an early age. Now, let's then see whether, in fact, you were worth saving that day. Okay. Let's get underneath your skin and find out what really makes you tick. So we're going to ease you in. We've been asking all of our guests to say, we've been starting them off with the same problem. So we're going to do that now, and then we're going to take you on a journey with three more questions. Okay. So Sam.
Okay, Jamie. So this is the classic trolley problem, which people will be familiar with from pop culture and from just general entry-level philosophy. So you're standing next to a railway track, and there is a trolley barreling down the track. There is a lever next to you, and looking down the track, you can see the trolley is going to hit five people. Now, if you pull this lever, you can move the trolley onto another set of tracks, but you can see on that set of tracks is one person. Do you let fate decide and let it hit the trolley, hit the five people, or do you pull the lever, saving the five, but ultimately submitting one to death?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, really, isn't it? I don't know any of these people, so I'm not at a games event with Simon, and Simon's on one side of the track, and the other five people are like
people you hate.
Yeah, you know,
the people who put those adverts in those magazines.
Yeah, the people, the ads department, who made me, you know, try to put ringtones in the, you know, because then it would just be an easy. It's a decision, and it would help me in my role, in my job.
No. I've only got what's written on the card, so it's right. Five people, and it's one person.
Well, you know, you've got to try and save as many people as possible. As long as I was, you know, if pulling the lever meant that, you know, I wouldn't be blamed for the murder of one person.
Why do you think you wouldn't be blamed? like. If you pull the trigger.
So you're saying that actually I'd be better off you just walking, going, you know, kind of whistling and going, just going off to get an ice cream. Leaving behind me the sounds of multiple deaths going on.
I don't know. I guess it's whatever helps you sleep at night, really. What do you think, Simon? Are you going to weigh in on this and help Jamie out?
Well, I'm just interested in that his potential actions come with conditions. That I'll do it as long as I won't get blamed. I mean, have you got?
Well, this is the classic. Isn't this the classic experiment of when they're turning up the they can hear someone being tortured in the other room and they're turning up the electric and it's like, will I be blamed? And as soon as they were, you know, cleared of any, oh yeah, you'll be fine, you won't be blamed. It was like, yeah, turn up the electric. I'm fine. I'm pressing the button to torture them.
You've come onto the wrong podcast, Shane. What do you think this is?
This is a trial, isn't it? This is like a
dark secrets.
All right. Well, I would pull the lever and save five people, and yeah, and just kill one person. And hope there was somebody that I didn't like, or you know, someone involved in, you know, getting rid of Channel 4 or something like that.
Okay, so with that baseline set, are you happy, Simon? Do you want to keep prodding along with this?
I mean, no, it feels, you know, we've had that answer before on the podcast. It feels like the right thing to do, even though you are directly killing somebody. So as long as you are happy with that, Jamie, then I think we're fine to proceed.
Yeah, I'm not delighted about it, but, you know, I think that I could... Your Honour, I could actually, you know, defend myself in a court of law and say, well, I saved five people. I think I'd be lauded as a hero and given a ticker tape parade through most towns in the UK. So I think I'd be happy with that.
Let's hope that you're properly lauded, I would say, then, in that case. I mean, I'm not sure in the game whether you get fireworks and confetti, Sam, do you?
No, it's more just general disappointment in the game. It's not... No keys to the city here.
I've played a bit of the game, and it's just very judgmental, I found.
Yeah, it's based on my mother, and she's lovely, and obviously it's a very cartoonish version of her, but yes. Okay, so with that then, if we move on to today's topic. Today we're mainly going to be focusing on AI, so artificial intelligence. And I think this is really interesting because it's where the trolley problem almost comes into current day, where people are programming driverless cars. These problems are actually properly discussed on, you know, should a car hit five and should a car hit one, so on and so forth. So your first problem here, Jamie, is the development problem. So you need to choose how we as a society develop driverless cars. Do you want to focus on a model that would always save as many lives as possible in an accident, or a system that would save passengers at any cost?
Well, this is an interesting question. I've actually had this discussion with people who work in software, and I think at the moment companies are avoiding having any AI at all, making any decisions. So actually at the moment there's no AI decisions on who lives or dies. It just would plow through 100 people if they're in the way. You know, there's nothing that would do anything at the moment, I don't think. But answering your question, I think that you would have to, if you had to have one or the other, you would have to have one that would save as many lives as possible. This is what the government does all the time, isn't it? It's like the about vaccinating, whether you vaccinate kids or not. You look at the model and you say, well, you know, a small percentage will get ill and may even die, but overall it will protect more people. So you have to go with the greater good. So that would be protect more people, I think, rather than just the people in the car.
So with that, do you not think that if you own a car, it should almost be protecting you, like it's your object and it's your property?
You mean I'm sort of like...
If you were to...
Like an evil version of Kit out of Knight Rider.
Well, it's more just, you know, I wouldn't want to buy a toaster what might kill me to save next door.
Well, don't put your fingers in it.
You know, it's, you know, I don't know.
You wouldn't sell many toasters if they were killing people. It's like, yeah, it's quite a good toaster, but you've got a 1 in 10 chance of it, you know, electrocuting you. So, I mean, same with cars, isn't it? A lot of people buy their cars based on how safe they are. And, of course, you know, that's a good decision. But I think more people now are probably, including ourselves, buy an X car, will be an electric car, you know, something that will save the planet in the long run. So, no, I think I'm more interested in the society at large and helping more people than just being a selfish idiot.
But you buy a car that's safe because it's going to protect you. It's safe for you, isn't it, as the driver? Whereas the car that you are developing the AI for is not going to be protecting you necessarily.
Well, it is if the software is to protect pedestrians and other people more than it is. If I'm out and about walking about, because I won't be buying one of those cars. I'll be in my car. I walk around and get public transport. So, you know. I think you have to go with something that would protect you, otherwise protects other people more than it would. But you know, it's not like you'd say, "Well, okay, we're going to have AI that protects as many people as possible, but we're going to take out the seatbelts and we're going to take out all the safety things that are in the car." You'll have those as well.
If you were developing the AI for a bus, then you would want it to harm cars, would you?
You would have it harm as less people as possible. So if there was one person on the, you know, if it was a runaway bus and there was one person walking across the road, but there was a car full of, you know, four people on the right-hand side, you'd plough through the one person, wouldn't you, rather than the five in the car.
You almost sound happy about it.
I love the phrase "plough."
Well, I was imagining myself as the bus driver watching it happen. Because you know, obviously, you wouldn't have a bus driver, would you? But you maybe have, you know, somebody just like a robot.
So Simon, are you happy with that answer? Are you?
I am. Yes. No. I think that's offering some insight into how Jamie views cars and. Yeah, I just wonder if he was ever in the position of developing AI shoes, what sort of weaponry they would conceal.
So our next problem is the social problem. So this is a new idea. So travel could be cheaper. Users would get shown ads while they travel for free in driverless taxis. Companies would get paid by the marketing agencies for gradually changing the behaviour of the passengers through constant commercials. So the users of the car would be the product, not the car itself. So this is effectively the Facebook model, where the public use it for free, but really the advertisers are paying for it.
Hmm.
So how would you feel about a free taxi company which shows adverts to people while they travel?
This sounds like Conservative Party policy. I mean, surely you'd have a properly funded, public funded transport system, which is you know what we need, rather than just thinking that the free market can solve everything. I don't see anything wrong. You know, you go in a cab, you see adverts everywhere. I don't see anything wrong with that. But the moral aspect of it being free because of that, rather than it being actually the government funding a proper public transport system, is the wrong way of looking at it, I think.
I feel like Jamie's got me here, Simon. I've got a load of notes down, but he just keeps bypassing them.
I think maybe he's disappointed that no one's actually getting physically hurt.
Well, then maybe that could be in the adverts.
Maybe. You know. It's difficult to argue with his reasoning. I think this this problem itself, I mean, obviously we are all living through it. Nothing bad has happened because of Facebook, has it?
Yeah, we're all fine. The world is a happier, bouncier place. You know, there's more pictures of cats.
So with this, Jamie, are you saying that, a large tech company came out with this product tomorrow and it was...
And they're all great, aren't they? All the big tech companies, you know, owned by fantastic people, you know.
So Jamie's answer to that is that he doesn't want people to have free travel, but he does want the government to do their job properly. Is that...
Hmm. It shouldn't be a replacement for what the government should be doing. You know, it's like NHS charities, you know, which are a good thing, but the government should be paying the NHS enough so that we don't need charity to go towards the NHS, so they're not doing their job properly. So I would say that... it might be a good idea, but it shouldn't be a replacement policy. I wouldn't be bothered by having adverts in a car or whatever, you know, to use for free. But yeah, I can see the Conservatives using this and going, yeah, we're going to give free taxis for everyone, and then they just play Russia Today on it.
Okay then, I think I'm happy with that. And Simon, I think he's I came for an ethics debate, and Jamie's destroyed me with politics. So we'll see how we get on with the next one.
I was going to say that I thought he'd broken the trolley problem, but he did at least come down on one side. So.
Yeah.
Okay, so the last one for today is the unemployment problem. So with AI...
Oh, don't start Jamie off now.
Thatcher.
Okay, so the unemployment problem. With AI developing so quickly, many will lose their jobs. Taxi drivers, couriers, and shop assistants will become extinct within a few years, but the cost of living will drop massively. Do you think we should keep developing AI in these areas, or do you think that it should be controlled to stop mass job loss?
Well, you see, again, coming at it from my point of view, are these jobs well paid? Are they worth having as a job? Are they, you know, are they worthwhile? You know, is working in an Amazon work, you know, a Amazon warehouse, is that a good job for someone to have? I suppose if they're getting well paid and it's, you know, they get health benefits and all that, yeah. But whether the AI will get rid of... So it will get rid of those jobs because, like, there'll be robots in the warehouses or taxi drivers and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess, effectively, that's already started to happen. It's just, you know, fully phasing it out. So every supermarket will just be self-service checkouts, and pretty much every taxi would just be driverless and so on.
Well, with the money, you know, I'm sure there'd be a way of doing it, but with the money saved and you're saying that the, you know, the cost of living's down and everything, then the government should be paying, you know, give everyone an opportunity to do something, give them some money to just go off and do what they want to do. So if they want to be artists, they can be artists. If they want to be actors, go off and do that. If they want to be, make stuff out of wood, go and do that, you know. Actually, you know, so we get a lot more people actually doing the jobs that they've always wanted to do, trying different things out. Wouldn't that be a better world if they didn't, you know, if people were just sort of paid to do something that they really wanted to do?
Do you think that people would want to do that? I because we're all creative here, and I imagine all of us would love to, you know, just be painting and singing and meeting up with friends and talking about stuff all day. But I imagine a large part of the population quite like their 9 to 5 and going in and having a cup of tea with someone in the morning and talking about their neighbours and so on.
Well, I think there's a philosopher that was going on about, you know, this was going to happen in the future. You know, we'll have more leisure time. So what are we going to do when there's less work? You know, philosophically, as human beings, what are we going to do? What is going to drive us if there's no kind of work ethic anymore? And we, you know, there's no reason to work anymore because all this stuff is being done for us. So that's a philosophical question, is like, what do we do as human beings? Do we work to a higher ideal? Do we, you know, or do we just sit around and drink lager and watch football? You know, it's like, that's a philosophical question, isn't it?
Well, I think the surest way of getting everybody running back to the Amazon warehouses is if I was to start singing all fucking day. Like, nobody wants that.
Please, God, no. Yeah, I mean,
I think something worries me about this, and I don't want to come down sort of like bad on AI. I think that AI is the future, and there's a load of really cool uses for it at the minute. But I think but
who's making the AI, Sam? You know, it's interesting. In your game, you go on about the fact that, you know, it's white men who are making the AI, and it's like it can. You know, with some of the facial recognition, it doesn't work with minorities and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's the AI is going to have the same characteristics of the people that create it. And at the moment, it's very rich white men. And is that a good thing? You know, that's a moral question of, well, you know, we should have better AI and better development and more diverse teams if that's going to be the case. Otherwise, we're going to recreate those problems that we've got at the moment of inequality and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I guess when it comes to AI, I'm more that because it's going to happen, everyone needs to get involved, and that we need to have these sort of discussions. But yeah, my fear with it is I think we'll get this really nice grace period where you do get more free time, like you said, and then I think that when it comes to my hobbies, and I would include making games one of them, is when AI can do that to an extent that it's so superior to me, the worry that it would make me feel worthless for a hobby. I hope that doesn't happen, because I imagine that people who make furniture as a hobby don't get upset when they see you can buy a table at IKEA for 40 quid. I worry that that's the future.
Yeah, well, it's a big question, and there's questions coming up in music at the moment, because there's already AI algorithms that, you know, you can pile in a load of Beethoven, and the AI algorithms start making music that people who love Beethoven can't tell the difference. They're going, you know, is this a lost piece of Beethoven? You know, and it's In the next sort of 5, 10, 15 years, we're going to have this issue with the morality of that. You know, what happens to the Beatles catalogue when you can just put into AI loads of Beatles songs and it just churns out loads of amazing new Beatles music? You know, what happens to that, and what happens to creatives, you know, to when that happens?
I think he's done it again, Sam. I think he's managed to baffle us with being right about everything.
I think what one thing I've found is that I've sort of almost had to play it quite aggressive, because usually I'm sort of like quite timid and like, oh, you know, yes, sir, please think about this bit. But I've had to be on the back foot here.
Yeah, well, all I'm doing is I'm sat here thinking, this could, you know, Jamie's life could have been so different if we'd left him to grow up in Germany, like some German Tarzan. Like, you know, what would his life have been like then?
I'd have come out of the forest sort of 20 years later, kind of speaking German, you know, surviving off lager.
Exactly.
You know, just kind of this feral creature with, you know, something would have happened.
Exactly. But thank goodness we didn't. Thank goodness we fucked him back, stuck him on a plane for us all to enjoy. Germany's loss is our gain. I think it's difficult to argue against you. Fascinating listening to you debate the topics, though. So I think Jamie only killed one person, despite wanting to kill all cars. I think so far this series he's winning.
I think the Conservative Party came out of it pretty beaten, battered, and bruised, though. I mean, he may not have killed many people.
They're not people. They're not people.
No, it's, they're not. You know, they don't count. So in the AI, you know, you can just aim for them and it's fine.
We're only joking. Disclaimer. Jamie, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
Pleasure.
Lovely to see you. Thank you for answering our questions. We will tot up the high score table at the end of the series and find out who the worst person in the games industry is. But I think it's safe to say that that's not you.
Thanks, mate.
Great. Well, listen, thank you so much for listening, everybody. I hope you found that interesting and enlightening. Remember, the game Trolley Problem Inc. is out now on Steam or on Epic or from all good PC digital stores. Hope you have fun enjoying it. I say fun. It is awful, but hopefully it'll make you think. Thanks once again, and I'll see you next time, Sam.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. Thanks, Jamie.
Bye.